Now, your host for Public Pulse, Floyd Whitey.
Monday, April 21st, from Wyoming's Emerald City, I'm Floyd Whiting, and this is Public Pulse. This morning, we're joined by orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Jory Wasberger from Sheridan Orthopedic Associates. Good morning, Doc. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Now, where are you from originally?
I grew up in Gillette, Wyoming.
Gillette?
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's a smallish town.
Yeah. Kind of the rival.
Yeah. A little bit of the rival. Yeah. So. Named after Edward Gillette,
who railroad actually. Guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
He laid the railroad across Wyoming, or at least northern Wyoming.
Right.
And I do believe it was him who decided, we're not going into Johnson County. There's too many gunfights.
That's right.
Down in there. Now, how did you grow up? With urban, rural?
So I kind of grew up a mixture of both in town. So my dad was a teacher and principal, and my mom was a nurse. So they worked in town, and then they both grew up on ranches in Lusk, Wyoming. And then we had a place north of Gillette. So we spent a lot of our time riding horses and branding and checking cows and building fence and doing all that stuff. But I lived in town primarily. Yeah.
What was that like growing up with your dad as a teacher, the principal at school?
Scary. My dad was the junior high principal at Twin Spruce, and luckily I lived two blocks away from Sage Valley, so he was never directly in charge of me, but he was very easy to get in touch with if I was misbehaving. So
Yeah. You were expected to kind of probably behave a little bit better than everybody else, weren't you?
Yeah, sometimes I had a difficult time with that. I was a little fidgety kid, so I found myself getting into trouble, but some innocent trouble, nothing bad, but I had to mind my P's and Q's a little bit.
Yep. You know, when I was going to school, I was the daydreamer.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking out the window more than I was looking at the blackboard.
Mm-hmm.
And that still sticks with my father to this day. He'll still look at me and say things like, you daydreaming again? You daydreaming? Now, do you remember the moment you knew you wanted to work in medicine? Did your mom have a lot to do with that?
I think my mom had a tremendous amount to do with it. She was an OB nurse. And back then, Gillette, or Campbell County Health, had the daycare in the hospital. And so ever since I was probably two, maybe three, we went to the hospital every single day. And as soon as the daycare hours were over, we'd go, my brother and I, who's only a year younger than me, would walk up to my mom's office and hang out and look at all the new babies all the time. And
oh, yeah.
I remember wandering through the bowels of the hospital with her looking for, you know, certain things that they needed up on the floor. And yeah, I just... being in the hospital has always been part of me. And I think my mom, you know, I'm kind of like a torpedo. I get pointed in one direction and that's where I go. And I think my mom really wanted me to go into medicine and really just always interested me. And so, you know, I just kept the course till it happened.
Did your brother go into anything similar?
No.
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 Look on your face when you said that. Not at all.
No. My brother's, he's a rancher. And he lives in North Platte, Nebraska. He's doing great.
Oh, wow.
He does registered Black Angus bulls, and he's opening up a meatpacking plant. And, you know, I always tease him, you know, like I scored too good to score too well on tests to be able to do his job. But he's doing great.
Well, that's fantastic. What got him into that? Like, just out of curiosity.
Well, both sides of my families are ranchers, and my grandpa's ranch on my dad's side just celebrated its 100th year anniversary, and they actually got voted the number one ranch in the country by the Certified Angus Beef Association,
I think
2 years ago. So it's in our blood. Like everything we do is in ranching. And so my cousin and I are basically the only two that aren't in ranching in some fashion or another.
It's fascinating because you and your brother both went into the family business,
yeah,
in a way,
yeah,
and yet one's an orthopedic surgeon and the other one's a rancher.
Yeah, my brother, he's a pretty special talent. Like he was voted the number one youth ag producer in the country last year.
Oh, wow!
So he's doing great in his own right.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Was there like a like a light switch moment when you were like, that's it, I know I want to be a doctor?
Well, I think I was always looking for a way to help.
Yeah.
And it's like being a doctor is a real tangible, straightforward way to get a profession, to have a life and career where you spend your life in the service of other people. And, you know, you also get to live a great life. So it was kind of a match, perfect yeah. match.
Now, as you were going through this, when was it where you were like, you know what, orthopedics, the skeletal structure of man, that's where I want to be?
Well, it's hard. So when you're going through medical school, you kind of have to make a decision around your third year about what you want to do. And getting into orthopedics is difficult and scary. And so there's a large percentage of people that apply that don't get in. There's a huge number of applicants to spots. So to say you want to be an orthopedic surgeon takes a lot of courage, because you might fail, you know, you might yeah. not get into it. And so I was kind of scared to say, like, this is what I want to do, because I was scared of failing. And then I was doing a rotation at the University of Washington shoulder service with this really amazing orthopedic surgeon named Dr. Mattson. And he's kind of world renowned for shoulder replacement surgery. And he treated me like I was his son. And, you know, I was like, man, if this is the type of people and that I get to be around, and you get to see the outcomes of his patients, and they have a problem and he goes and fixes it, and 3 months later they're doing whatever they want to do, that's kind of was special to me. And then I was like, you know what, I'm doing it. I don't care if there's a risk of failure. I'm going to try it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what do they say? Like, anything worth doing, you know, is going to have a lot of risk to it.
That's right.
And so third year medical school, right?
Right.
And then you're like, you know what? Orthopedics. Do you apply for that?
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting. So we go through something called a match process, and the match process is it's really neat. So the guy who designed it actually won the Nobel Prize in Economics, and it's for the theory is called the stable marriage problem, which is interesting. So it's a way of transferring goods, which is, you know, the residency spot, without monetary exchange. So it's markets without money. And he designed it actually for kidney transplants. And so what happens is that the way it ends up working out is that they try to find the best place for you and the best place for, or the best applicant for the residency spot. And so you go and you apply. There's a central application service, and you get interviews, and you want to get somewhere between 12 and 14 interviews all over the country. And then when you go and interview at that place, you rank that place like 1 through 14, and then they rank you 1 through how many people they interviewed, and then they put it into the computer, and the computer finds the best match.
Oh, wow.
And that's how you end up where you end up. You don't get to say. The computer tells you where to go. And it's kind of scary because it's a legally binding contract. So say, you know, you're like, I went to medical school at the University of Washington, and say I ranked a place in Alabama, last on my list. If I open up the envelope and that's where it says I'm going, that's where I'm going. And you're going there for 5 years.
5 years.
Yeah.
And what is that like? I mean, I imagine that's a lot of pressure.
It's exhilarating. So when the way the match works, so you find out on a Monday if you match, not where you match. And then on that Friday, you find out where you match. So, you know, going in if you matched or not. So getting the email on the Monday is actually scarier.
You know? Yeah.
So I remember, you know, like my buddies and I were all at a place called Lenny's in Seattle, and we all got our emails all at the same time. We didn't open them till we all got to Lenny's, and there's six of us there, and one of us didn't match, and it was heartbreaking for him. But the rest of us, it was such a weird dynamic where the rest of us were as happy as we'd ever been, and he was trying crushed. To figure out what he was gonna do.
Oh man, yeah. What do you do after that?
Well, they have another match process, and it's called the scramble, and you just scramble to find a spot. And it depends on what specialty you're going into. So he unfortunately was applying for orthopedics, and in orthopedics there's almost never an open spot. So I think that there's around 750 spots in the country, and all of them are filled every time, basically. Maybe one, maybe two are open. So
holy cow.
So he ended up doing general surgery. He's doing great. He has a good practice. He has good outcomes, and yeah.
But it's extremely competitive at that level.
It is, yeah.
Any specific reason as to why it's so competitive?
Because the orthopedics is fun. You know, people have problems, and you fix the problem, and they get better. And honestly, there's just a limited number of spots, and there's more demand than there is supply, and that drives up the competition.
What is it about bones that fascinates you the most?
Yeah, that's a good question. And because it's more than just bones, it's the ligaments and tendons and nerves and arteries around them. And so the bones are really cool because they're the rebar of your body. You know, they make movement possible, and without movement, people don't get to experience life the way
you're
jelly,
right?
And so bones are great because it's so silly, but you know, when someone breaks a bone, it's crooked. When you fix it, it's straight, and it's satisfying. It's like doing carpentry. You get things lined up, you get the foundation built, and then people start moving, and it's awesome.
You know, when I think about general injury, broken bones, probably what? The first major injury that a kid or a person ever has in their life.
Yeah.
And going in and having that, we all went to school, if it wasn't us, with the kid who had the cast we all got to sign.
Right.
You know, I see some of these 3D casts and things like that coming out, and I'm thinking, boy, you're removing one of the best parts about being a kid and actually having to experience this horrible event, but then you get to have everybody sign your cast.
Yeah. Well, I think we're a long ways away from getting rid of the traditional cast so far, so don't worry, kids. Get them signed.
Still going to get them signed. Get that peace sign put on there. Now, did you enjoy medical school?
Yeah. It was fun and some of the best times in my life. It was also really challenging. It was terrifying in the beginning. And, you know, I was a Wyoming kid who went to the University of Wyoming. I'd never really lived outside of Wyoming. And then you get shipped off to a major city, which mine was Seattle. And that was a huge change. You know, I think if I could describe Seattle in one way, it would be claustrophobic. And we're the opposite here. And so it took me a long time, like 18 months of trying to figure out how to live in a city and how to enjoy the cultures and the different foods and the different shows and all of that. But once I got the hang of it, it was probably the best thing that ever happened. And then the other part about medical school is that I just developed some of the best friendships I've ever had. And those guys are still some of my best friends. I talked to two of them yesterday, and I'm trying to recruit one here to town. We'll see if it happens. It would be amazing if he does. And the other one, he's an ER doctor in Jackson, Wyoming. And we do stuff together. We ski every year. We are doing the Dead Swede bike race this year.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. So it was incredible, the friendships that I made. And, you know, like in terms of difficulty, there's not like one thing that you learn in medical school that's challenging. It's like everything is very learnable. It's just the volume is so high. So you're drinking from a fire hose. So you really have to figure out how to download all the information and keep it in your brain.
Yeah. Did you have any tricks that you used in school?
We had a lot of tricks. We had some adaptive learning resources where you would take a quiz, and the quiz you would answer the question. And if you knew the question stone cold, you would say like, yeah, I know this one. And then if you didn't know it, then you would say, yeah, I need some more practice on this one. And then that question would show up repetitively over and over over time. And then just through repetition, we learned it. We had some cool like visual skills. We had like online testing modules and stuff like that, which sort of replicate your board questions and stuff like that. Yeah. So for me, it was a lot of repetition, a lot of just brute time.
Just commit to
just
memory.
Just doing it.
Just over and over. Do you remember, what was your toughest course to your memory, where you look back and you're like, boy, I really had a tough time with this
one? Yeah, the one I would say was it was called histology. And so that's like the microscopic structure of cells. And so to be able to look at a, you know, a microscope slide and tell what cell was what and what was going on, that was pretty challenging for me.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. We had that. I think it had the highest failure rate of all of our classes. And I remember opening up my score and being like, oh, thank God.
So you didn't have to do that again.
Yeah.
Get through it and just let it go. You know, I think about looking at, say, like a muscular cell and the difference between that and a bone cell.
Yeah, they're entirely different.
Yeah, that would be an easy identifier.
That is, yeah.
Now, when it comes to the makeup of the cell of a bone, what does that even look like?
Well, it's hard to describe. It's probably best to look at a picture. But in general, there's two main types of cells, like osteoclasts and osteoblasts. And osteoblasts are the builders, so they build the cell, and the osteoclasts are the remodelers. So they're wildly different, but they produce like the matrix that calcifies and turns into bone.
So the cell itself kind of develops or reproduces, and then it gets hard after that.
Yeah, it kind of surrounds itself, and then it kind of lives in these little channels and sends out signals and keeps the bone healthy.
You've seen some interesting stuff, Doc. We're going to talk about more when we come back. We will have more with our orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Jory Wasberger. Right after this, you're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE at 103.9 FM. Sheridan. Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse. I'm your host, Floyd Whiting. This morning, we're speaking with Dr. Jory Wasserberger. He's from Sheridan Orthopedic Associates. Now, Doc, when we look at Sheridan as a whole, what's the most common thing that you actually have to treat here? You see a lot of broken bones, I'm sure. But do you? Broken bones might be general physician.
Yeah, no, I'd say... trauma and fracture cases are probably about 15% of the total practice, so it's not actually the largest part of what we do. We see a lot of arthritis, and the treatments for arthritis are joint replacement surgery in general. So we do a lot of shoulder replacements, hip replacements, knee replacements. We do a lot of tendon work and rotator cuff surgeries in the shoulder to get people to move their shoulders better. I see a lot of meniscus tears in the knee. I see a lot of ligament injuries in the knee. So that's kind of my specialty. What I do is more sports medicine based. So it's a lot in general, younger people. And so a lot of just ACL reconstructions, meniscus surgeries, and other stuff that they have going on around the knee or any other kind of sports related stuff. I'm starting to see a lot more shoulder and elbow stuff because baseball season's kicking up and the kids' shoulders are starting to hurt. So it's kind of cyclical. It kind of depends on what's going on in the community for me, for what I'm seeing.
You know, when I was a kid, knock on wood, I haven't broken a bone, but I've dislocated my shoulder.
Yeah.
And that was a terrible, terrible experience.
Yeah, that's a painful one.
I think I was about 11 years old.
Young.
Yeah, I got wrapped around the axle of a four-wheeler.
Oof.
Stupid accident. We were being irresponsible kids out playing around on four-wheelers, and my clothes got caught in the chain, and it just wrapped and grabbed me. Yeah, I was a tiny kid. But dislocated my shoulder. We managed to put it in, but kind of never been the same. What are some of the problems that can arise from like a dislocated joint like that?
Yeah, I mean, the most common one, especially in a younger population, is recurrent instability, so more shoulder dislocations. And so the shoulder, I kind of like to think of it as a golf ball and a tee. So it's a small socket with a big ball. And then there's a soft tissue gasket around the socket called the labrum. The labrum increases the diameter or the circumference of the socket, and then also gives a good suction seal so the shoulder doesn't come out of place. And it's almost impossible to dislocate your shoulder and not injure the labrum. And so recurrent instability is what I see most commonly in younger populations. And then they say around 40 years old, if you have a shoulder dislocation, we actually worry a lot more about the rotator cuff. And the rotator cuff is a series of four muscles that allow the shoulder to move. So the shoulder has more degrees of freedom than any joint in the body. So, you know, forward, back, in, out. The rotator cuff is one muscle on the front, two muscles on the top, and one muscle in the back. And together they work in conjunction to keep the ball concentrically moving on the socket. So if you're 40 or greater and have a shoulder dislocation, I'm more worried about your rotator cuff rather than recurrent instability or labral injury.
When it comes to like the ACL, we hear that a lot, especially sports medicine. What is an ACL?
So the ACL is an anterior cruciate ligament. So there's two main ligaments inside the knee, and one is called the PCL, which is the posterior cruciate ligament, and the other one is right next to it. It's called the anterior cruciate ligament. So cruciate means cross. So the two ligaments cross each other. So the anterior cruciate ligament is really important for anterior translation of the shin bone, of the tibia. So it keeps the shin bone from going too far forward. And it also is really important because it helps with rotational stability of the knee. So it keeps it from going forward and spinning. And it's a really, really powerful ligament, and you need it in order to have a good, stable knee. And if you're a young person or an active person, there's almost never a case where I recommend not fixing it because it's just so powerful for knee stability.
James has got a question.
Quick question. Is somebody that I used to play baseball. And the most common injury that you'll see, maybe not most common, but one that is season ending, I guess, is the tearing of the UCL, where you get Tommy John surgery is what it's called. Can you explain what the UCL is in the elbow and what Tommy John is actually repairing, I guess?
Yeah. So the Tommy John ligament is, we call it the MUCL, the medial ulnar collateral ligament. And so it's on the medial side. Medial means towards the inside. And there's the bump on the inside of your elbow. And if you hit it, it's called the you know, it's, people say it's the funny bone. Right. And so the Tommy John ligament is immediately adjacent to that on the bump. And it attaches down on the ulna, which is the bone that goes to your wrist. And it's really important. It's a really important ligament to have to be able to torque your arm back. And so that stresses the medial aspect of the elbow, and it keeps your elbow nice and stable. And so when you're repairing it, that's when you put suture anchors or something like that, and you actually put the old ligament back to where it was. The problem with doing that is that the ligament is diseased to begin with. So a lot of times we're reconstructing it. So we use the term repair and reconstruction as two completely different things. And a reconstruction is when we use either your tendon from another spot in the body or a cadaver tendon and rebuild that ligament. And so we attach it to the bump on the elbow, and then we attach it to the ulna. So we give you that stability back.
So you can actually take a tendon from another part of the body or from someone else's body entirely and repair ours.
That's correct.
Or reconstruct ours.
That's correct. Yes. And so the most common one we use is called the palmaris. And if you take your thumb and pinky and put them together and you see this little prominence in the middle of your wrist,
yeah,
that's the palmaris tendon. And so we'll harvest that and then use it to reconstruct the MUCL.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
I never knew that you could actually do that.
Right. And right now is like a really exciting time for Tommy John surgery. So the techniques have just gotten so much more advanced over the last 5 to 10 years. And so traditionally a Tommy John recovery was 18 months. So it's career ending for a lot of people, and it ends their season and half of the next season. So now our techniques have gotten so much better, and we're including other implants, which have allowed us to have the recovery time, which is pretty incredible.
When it comes to tendons, you know, people talk in sports medicine, you know, you got some people say stretching is super important. Other ones say, man, not so much. Is it?
So the actual literature is all over the place. And like one stretch is not, it's not always an apples to apples comparison. And so in general, I think that warming up is a good idea. I think that dynamic stretching prior to an activity is good. So that's like doing stretches that you're moving through. So that's like high knees and butt kickers and lunges and, you know, stuff like that, like swinging your shoulders around. And then static stretching, which is more traditional, you know, your hamstring stretch where you just bend over and touch your toes. I think that that's good for post-activity.
So you stretch before you work out?
I try to, but I'm pretty inconsistent with it. It depends on the amount of time I have. If the choice is to stretch or to work out, then I generally choose to work out, but I try to.
Now, when we talk about joint replacement, I've always had certain questions when it comes to this. What exactly is being replaced? And let's take a shoulder. We'll start with a shoulder. How much of the shoulder is actually being replaced? Is it just the ball joint itself and then everything else is still connected? Because I've always wondered how you get nutrients and blood to the rest of the bone.
Yeah, so our techniques in general try to spare the native anatomy in as much as possible. And then what we're replacing, we try to only replace what we've cut out. And so when you're doing a shoulder replacement, there's actually multiple different types of shoulder replacements. And the best one that has the most outcome or the best outcomes with the longest long-term survivorship is called an anatomic total shoulder replacement. And that's where you have to cut off the ball and then you replace it with metal, a highly polished metal. And then the socket side we replace with a plastic. And so you really try to take as little as bone as possible.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Now, how long does a shoulder surgery, when you're in there, actually cut from the time that you mask up to the time that you leave, what's your average time?
An hour and 15 minutes. Yeah.
That's not that long.
Yeah. I told you I was a little fidgety. I don't,
you can't do a surgery that just, over an hour.
I don't like to be there for a long time.
That's actually really funny. Now, when we look at the replacements and what they're made of, you know, I know there's been a lot of advancements.
Mm-hmm.
What are they typically made of?
So they're made out of metal, and the metal is porous. And so it's got microporous coatings on it. And what we love about that is that bone loves to grow into these tiny little spaces. And so what ends up happening is that the bone grows into the microporous surface. And so it's a biologic fixation. So we're not relying on cement or something like that to get it to heal.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then the advancement that I think that you were talking about is like the lifespan of joint replacement surgery has increased across the board. You know, and a hip is different from a knee and a shoulder, but what has changed primarily is the weak point in the replacement is the plastic that we use. And now we're using a highly a cross-linked plastic, which has really increased the lifespan of our total joints.
How long ago was this really kind of put into practice?
Oh, we're around 20 years, I would guess, yeah.
All right, and on that, we're going to take another quick commercial break. We will have more with Dr. Jory Wasserberger from Sheridan Orthopedic Associates in just a moment. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE. 103.9 FM, Sheridan. Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse, proudly brought to you by our friends out there at First Federal Bank and Trust. I'm Floyd White. My guest this morning is Dr. Jory Wasserberger from Sheridan Orthopedic Associates. Now, Doc, we were talking about replacements and what they're made of. And how far technology's kind of come along. Can you remember back when you started, and you don't look that old, so it probably wasn't too many decades ago, but has the material changed since you've been in? And practicing.
Yeah, I mean, there's been some big technological advances, and probably the biggest and most tangible one is robotic surgery. And we're using robotic surgery for joint replacements, and it's something that we've actually started doing here in Sheridan. We have our own robot. We started using it at the beginning of this month, and we've had really good outcomes. And the cool part about robotic surgery is that the robot doesn't replace the surgeon. It just assists the surgeon. And so we use it for knee replacements, and robotic surgery has been shown to place the components exactly where you want them. So it's very, very accurate. And then we don't have any, explicit data that says that robotic surgery is better than manual total replacement surgery, but we do have studies that show that if there are components that are not aligned, the outcomes aren't as good. And so there are studies that also show that the robotic replacement decreases outlier prosthetic placement in the actual knee. And so that's the biggest change that I've seen in my career so far.
So do you use the robot?
Yeah, I've been using the robot, and I've been pleasantly, it's a little scary in the beginning because you're taking you're putting a lot of trust into the robot, but I have to tell you, my patients that have had the robotic surgery have flown through the recovery, and I think that's because you end up causing less trauma to the soft tissues around, and so they have less postoperative pain, and their range of motion has been excellent, and I've been very pleased with how it's been going.
It's incredible. Did you have to? You obviously got training on this robot.
Yeah, it was interesting. So where I did my fellowship was kind of the hotbed for robotic replacement surgery, and so there's a plethora of different companies that make the robot, and I worked with four surgeons who all worked with four different manufacturers who were all on the design team. So it was kind of neat. I got to see it and train with it from an early time in my training.
That's incredible.
It was.
Are you basically sitting back behind a large control panel and looking through a camera?
No, it's really neat. So it's most of them have haptic feedback, which means that you still control the depth of the cut and where the cut is going, but it just aligns itself in the perfect amount of degrees to be able to make a cut on the bone. So you're right there. There's no difference really. Other than it's telling you, like, you map out the bone, and it has a really complex software application that tells you, like, you say, like, all right, this is what the bone looks like. This is where I want the implant to be. And then it adjusts the saw to where you can have that exact location, and you make the cuts, and then you do the rest.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Basically like a very steady mechanical hand.
Exactly, yeah. And it's like you still pull the trigger, you still turn on the saw, and it doesn't do anything you don't want it to do.
That's incredible. Now, when it comes to patients who receive a surgery from the robot and those who don't, is there any real specific line where you're like, okay, well, this is going to require the robot or this isn't?
No, you know, like every robotic surgery that we can do manually. It does help if someone has like a huge deformity. So say they're really knock-kneed or really bow-legged, the robot really excels at trying to correct that deformity to give them a nice straight leg.
Hmm. Now, a question that I did have just to try and help some listeners out there. And this might be something that you're like, you know, that isn't my field. And if it isn't your field, that's absolutely fine. Osteoporosis. What is this?
Yeah, so osteoporosis is a qualitative feature of the bone. And so what I mean to that is that the quality of the bone as we get older gets weaker. And so it's like it loses its strength. So what ends up happening is that you get more resorption of the bone over time than you do building. And so what that does is it makes the bone at higher risk of developing a fracture from something that used to not cause a fracture at all. So say you had a fall and you break your wrist, and you definitely have a higher risk of breaking your wrist if the bone is not strong. And so one of the ways that we define osteoporosis is from an insufficiency fracture, which means like a fracture that shouldn't have caused or an injury that shouldn't have caused a fracture did cause a fracture. And that is by definition osteoporosis.
How do we stave this, or how can we help to stave this off?
So there are multiple ways, and honestly, the best thing to do, so osteoporosis hits us later in life, so generally in our seventh or eighth decade of life, and the best thing that you can do is, one, keep moving, and then in my mind, the best thing that you can do is to lift weights. And so bone responds to stress, and if you're weighting your bones, then it gets stronger, and it keeps them from developing osteoporosis.
So a senior within the community doing just a little physical therapy or exercising on the side is probably going to help stave that off.
100% it helps, you know, and like one of the biggest killers of people is a hip fracture, and that happens from a fall in general, and it happens when the bone is weak. And so what you can do is, one, load your bones. So that's doing squats and lunges and jumps and running and, you know, stuff like that. And the dirty secret about a hip fracture is that there's a 30% mortality rate at 1 year.
Wow.
Regardless of what we do. So it's a huge issue for our community. And like Sheridan in general is older than a lot of the surrounding communities in Wyoming. And so hip fractures are a huge deal. And if you want to do your best to keep that, then lift weights. And the other thing that lifting weights does, it allows you to have good reaction times and the strength to be able to catch yourself. So say you catch your toe on the throw rug in your living room, you know, and you have to take a stutter step and you have a deep flexed position of your knee, then you have the strength to keep yourself from going down.
That is all kind of news to me about the hip fractures and the mortality rate attached to
that. It's scary.
It's incredible.
Yeah. It's really scary.
Any specific reason as to why?
Well, the complications that happen from a hip fracture, almost all of them happen after the hip fracture, and they're almost all related to immobility. And so what can happen is you can develop a blood clot in your leg, or you can sit in one spot for so long that you get a bed sore, and the bed sore gets infected, or you can get a urinary tract infection, or you can get pneumonias, and that's what ends up getting people.
So it's not the hip fracture.
No.
It's other things that can result from this.
It's the mobility issue.
Hunters, mountaineers, individuals who walk uphill a lot. Is that a workout?
Oh, for sure.
Is that a big benefit there?
Yeah, those guys, the hunters and stuff that we see, they generally fly through their recovery because they're used to moving. They're used to putting in big efforts and carrying heavy loads. And, you know, like you get an elk, your pack could easily be over 100 pounds, and you could be 5 miles from the trailhead, and you have to do that 3 or 4 times just to get it out. So those hunters are a hardy group.
And hikers, if we had individuals out there who like getting out into the mountains, right there is a fantastic outing, recreation and exercise. Throw some weight in the pack.
Yeah. And it's good for the soul too. So it keeps the mind healthy, and you can't have a healthy mind without a healthy body. Well, you can, but your mind is much better with a healthy body.
Absolutely. All right. Now, when we look at Sheridan Orthopedic Associates, you guys have recently joined the Sheridan Memorial Hospital team. How did this come about?
Yeah, I think it was just kind of a natural progression of how things are going in medicine. You know, we joined with the hospital, not because we had to, but because we thought it was best for the community. You know, joining the hospital gives us more resources, so we're able to do things like have the robot available, and now we don't have to spend as much time arguing with insurance companies about whether or not they're going to pay. The hospital has a redundant department that helps with all of that, and it helps us build and be strong for the future so that we don't have to worry about the day-to-day stuff as much, so we can just really focus on patient care.
Did you receive any kind of feedback from the community when you made this partnership?
No, by and large, the feedback has been very positive. I don't think anybody has come to me, at least personally, and told me that it was a bad idea and what we're selling out and stuff like that. I think everybody's pretty excited.
I mean, this opened up a lot of doors.
100%. We have a lot of really cool things that we're doing, you know, that we're connected now with the hospital, which has their own PT department. And I think that you talked to Justin and Lindsay, who are two awesome, young, smart, energetic physical therapists who are doing a lot of prevention, injury prevention programs and running programs. And they have a new fancy treadmill that will show you the weak spots in your gait, and so you can really have targeted therapy. So I think it's a really exciting time for us.
Because in a way, it kind of grew your team.
I guess. Yeah, it made our team better. Definitely, yeah.
Now, when it comes to how individuals get in to see you, is that usually like a referral from their general physician?
I mean,
someone doesn't wake up one day and say, I need to go see a shoulder doctor, or do they?
Well, yeah, I think it's different for every person. You know, a lot of people start with their primary care provider, and it depends on the system that you're in. So, you know, we have a large percentage of our patients that come from the VA. And if you're a VA person, then they generally have to have a referral to be able to get to us.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, they try to keep things in-house and try to do the non-operative stuff first, which is nice. And then, you know, if someone does PT for their shoulder injury, it doesn't get better, that's when they generally get sent to us. But in Wyoming, you do not have to have a referral. You can just call and say, hey, I want to see Dr. Quinn or Dr. Steiner, and you can get in to see us.
So it can literally be that easy.
Yeah.
Now, when we look at the range of services that you guys provide, a lot of times people think that there's got to be some sort of special doctor to deal with your back. Is that true?
That is true. Spine is kind of a special area in orthopedics where, in general, 99% of the people that are having their back issues taken care of are having it done by a spine surgeon. You know, if it's non-operative care, I do see a lot of people with sciatica and other back problems, and we do the non-operative care. And if it gets to a point where they need a surgeon, we'll refer them. But that is changing. We're bringing on Dr. Uluberry, who's a Sheridan guy who is slated to start in July, I believe.
Oh, wow.
And he's been here before. He's well known. He's got great outcomes. He treats his patients well. So we won't have to refer that out anymore.
Doc, is there anything you would like the community to know regarding the practice itself, the partnership with Sheridan Memorial Hospital, or maybe even just a prevention thing?
Well, I think Sheridan Orthopedics has been in the community since, I believe, 1979. So we have a long track record of taking care of our patients. We're all Sheridan people. We all live in Sheridan. We all love what Sheridan has to offer. We all love the community. We're all involved in different ways. And, you know, like, we're here to help, and we just want our community to stay what it is. You know, we're hikers and hunters and ranchers, and we're football players and basketball players and wrestlers. And we just want to keep it that way.
Yeah. And, make sure that you're going out lifting some weights. If you're going to go hiking, throw some weight in the back of that pack. Keep those hips nice and strong.
Yeah.
Doc, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to come in and see us today. It was an absolute pleasure talking to you. I didn't realize that orthopedics involved so much.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.